You're listening to episode 26 of The Monk. I'm your host, Katie Davey, and today I'm joined by Maida Reddy, who is the founder and CEO of Leading Women of Tomorrow. This episode kicks off a few episodes that we're going to be running towards the end of August and beginning of September, focused around back to school. I'm pretty sure I haven't actually announced this here or really publicly, but I'm actually going back to school in September to start my master's at Wilfrid Laurier University. So in kind of that theme, we wanted to highlight some other back to school things to end out the summer and kick off the year. So this is the first one of those. This is also a really interesting episode for me because we talk about getting women engaged on university campuses to consider elected office and leadership as they kind of move through life. This goes well with our A Woman's Places in the House t-shirt campaign as we lead into the federal election. So please feel free to head over to our website, femmonk.com/buy, to pick up one of those shirts as we lead into the federal election. And keeping with the back to school theme, we actually just recently launched a FemMonk book club. The first book we'll be reading is called Invisible Women, Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. If you want to join this, you can actually head right over to our Facebook page, and we have a book club group hosted on the page now, so just feel free to request access and you can jump on in. I guess that's all the updates I have today, so let's just head over into our conversation with Maida.
Hi, my name is Maida Reddy, and I'm the founder and CEO of Leading Women of Tomorrow. We are a group based out of the United States who works with college women across the country to empower them to consider careers in public service.
Amazing. And you are actually our very first guest based in the U.S. So thank you so much and congrats for, I don't know, the honor. Yes.
It is an honor.
Amazing. So we're really excited to have this conversation with you today, particularly as we lead kind of back into the school year. But I first want to just kind of ask, you know, we're based in Canada, of course, you're based in the United States, but the issue of women's representation broadly is faced, of course, by both Canada and the US and many places across the world. So I'd love just to get your perspective on why it's so important to focus on increasing gender representation.
Absolutely. So I like to think about the issue more so as if we don't have gender equality in governance, we can't have gender equality in all walks of life. I think having equal representation in government is one of the first steps to ensuring that women's rights issues and concerns are really given a fair voice on the national and international stage, really. I think furthermore, one of the biggest things is that there's a difference between empathy and experience. And as a young woman, and as I get a little bit older, I'm starting to realize that there's definitely a big distinction between having experienced something firsthand and having just like your community share stories with you about it, essentially. And while I think it's important to be an advocate for those around us, even though we might not be able to share in those issues, having firsthand experience on how something impacts your day-to-day life not only gives you a deeper mission to address this issue, first of all, but it also kind of gives you a unique perspective with which you can kind of develop solutions to it. So I really see this as the first step to the broader gender equality movement.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so true, right? Like, how can we expect equality in our laws if we don't actually have equality at the level of folks making those decisions? That's something I think a lot about as well. And so you folks focus predominantly on campus. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and why that is where you've decided to spend your time and more about kind of how you're supporting women on campuses?
Sure. So I think it really kind of starts with my own experiences on how I got interested in government and kind of the climate around when I expressed that interest to my own community and network. I think I kind of had started cultivating an interest when I was in late middle school, early high school. And as a minority woman in particular, there was a lot of pushback about what will people think? What, who's going to take care of your children? How's your husband going to feel about this? A lot of questions that I hadn't otherwise been pushed to think about in other professional fields. And I was incredibly fortunate that I had a strong community of mentors who were able to kind of guide me through a lot of my self-doubt and concerns and reservations. And as I got to the college stage, what I realized is that this is a theme that is a part of almost every young woman in government's narrative. And it's an unfortunate one. And I have a bit of a background in the sciences, so my next step was to kind of look at the literature behind what is kind of perpetuating this gender gap in governance, and is this theme just something that happens to be something in my own network of friends, or is this something that's experienced throughout the country and world? And I think what was somewhat disheartening to realize is that the fact that we're discouraging young women from pursuing this interest in leadership and government so early on is one of the leading causes of the perseverance of this gender gap in governance. So with that in mind, I started kind of thinking about what are some ways that we can not only encourage young women to hold on to any passions that they have for serving their community, but how can we also encourage people in fields that might not be traditionally considered adjacent to government to adopt somewhat of a leadership position within their professional community in the future. And that gave rise to what we now call Leading Women of Tomorrow. So our group had kind of been based all across the country. I go to school in Chicago. Quite a few of our folks are in DC, and we even have a couple in Boston now. So I think when we started talking about what were some things that each of our campuses were passionate about and what were some issues that the community around us was facing that was really central to the motivation for why we wanted to serve in government, we were having a lot of different conversations and answers. And so we kind of realized that the best way to proceed forward with this mission would be to develop something that was tailored to each campus community that we're working with. And that's actually been a really incredible part of my job, learning about what women across the country are really passionate about and figuring out how we can kind of incorporate either leadership lessons or pre-professional training into that. So a lot of our campus programming ranges from having like a local leading woman or legislator kind of come out to share their own story to salary negotiation workshops. I think we have a really broad scope, which I think is definitely one of the keys to just more broadly promoting women to leadership positions in the coming generation. And I'm really excited for the coming school year, as you mentioned, to promote more pre-professional programming. So a lot of our members from across the country can further interact with each other. And we're really excited as everyone is starting to kind of graduate and get older and kind of move to different parts of the country for this to be a resource for people to make friends and have allies across the country, really. In addition to that, we are also starting our legislative affairs department this year. So we're excited to kind of have a better pulse on what issues and causes people can be working with. That way we can also establish connections for them if they're interested in working in things outside of Leading Women of Tomorrow.
Amazing. Wow. It sounds like there's a ton of stuff going on, which I love to hear. Do you focus broadly on public service or specifically on kind of the elected side of governance?
I think that's a really interesting question. It kind of has started with this mission to address the gender gap in elected positions, essentially, because that's the most prominent statistic that we see in the media on a day-to-day basis. And a lot of the folks on our founding board were interested in serving in an elected position in the future. But as we kind of opened up our conversation to what each of our chapters needed, we kind of recognized that there was a broader need to empower women in public service and women in leadership positions. So that focus has more so shifted to the latter of empowering women in public service. Yeah.
No, it's so interesting. And I don't think we chat much about that broader kind of landscape of women in public service. When I was working in the New Brunswick provincial government, so the equivalent to state government, one of the things that I learned through a research project that a group of public servants were taking on was that at the very entry level to the provincial government, it was fairly kind of gender parity. But as you kind of went up the ranks and as you kind of got to the senior leadership positions, the numbers started to essentially like dwindle down at every level to the point where it was, you know, around 25-ish percent at the kind of top leadership ranks. And I thought that was so interesting because, again, when you look, it's not necessarily a pipeline issue. If you look at the entry level positions having the 50-50 or roughly 50-50 balance. So that was a really interesting question that I had was, again, like, why is this happening? And you see that broadly in many organizations, but I don't think that conversation happens as much in that space of the kind of public sector service positions and outside of the elected positions.
Absolutely. And that's like a really interesting point you raised. I think that kind of goes back to the cultural issue that we were talking about a bit earlier, in that being in these like lower level, like public service positions is almost something that's more accepted and easier to comprehend for a lot of people. It almost feels like it kind of fits the paradigm for like what roles a woman is allowed to take on to be within, I don't want to say her limits, but kind of what's been societally accepted for her. I think as a result, why we focus a lot on women in elected positions is that it's an easy way to get a snapshot of what the issue at hand is, really, because if we're seeing that the numbers are dwindling as you get to higher and higher positions, that's kind of just a reflection of the bigger issue here.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, yeah, campuses provide such an interesting microcosm for some of those discussions. And actually, when I was in university, my last year, I was the president of the student union. And out of, honestly, pure ignorance, I didn't realize until after I was elected that I was the first woman in, I think, 10 years, or maybe now, like when I add up the front end and the back end, I'm the only woman to have served in that position in the last 10 years, which is quite crazy because on our university campuses, we're seeing more and more the case now that it's actually more women than men on our campuses. So things like that are so interesting when you talk about that kind of, again, cultural self-selection almost of what roles work for women broadly in the leadership context. So yeah, I could definitely see how campuses would provide a really unique opportunity to engage with folks and help create some of those learning opportunities and kind of levels of confidence and networking.
Yeah, and I want to congratulate you on reaching such an incredible milestone on your campus. But I think an interesting point that kind of goes along with your experience is that it was brought to my attention that there happens to be a correlation between the likelihood of a woman serving in elected office within her campus community and her choosing to pursue a career in public office at a later point in her life. So I think being willing to tackle these tough topics early on and to push not only people who are part of our organization, but people who are part of each campus community to kind of contemplate what are the, I guess, societally norms early on is part of what breeds this cultural shift that needs to happen.
Have you seen, just based on the work with folks on campus or broadly, you mentioned digging into the research, what would you say from that experience are some of those biggest barriers? We've talked a little bit about some, but the biggest barriers that women face getting involved or getting just broadly elected to positions?
One of the things that stood out to me early on, and I think one of the things that was most personally discouraging to me, were the headlines, really, of how women are portrayed in the media if they choose to pursue leadership positions or to run for elected office, essentially. I think it's very common to see people kind of questioning whether or not a woman is going to have kids if she does choose, is elected to office, essentially. Like, they kind of shame her for not being necessarily a good mother or super involved, or how that kind of makes everyone else around her in the room feel. And it kind of makes you question whether or not you're going to be welcomed into a climate that's based on representation, unfortunately, when you see an image of just one woman sitting in a room full of men, and that's supposed to be the body that stands for the country and your interests. Beyond just seeing that it's not something that is commonplace, I would say, in the previous generation, and that being something that perpetuates the issue in subsequent ones, the as I kind of discussed earlier, just having this like inherent broad culture of the fact that women have different responsibilities and they have different obligations, as just like having a different place in society almost, is what's incredibly discouraging to a lot of individuals. And I think as a minority woman in particular, it was really disheartening to kind of realize that there wasn't anyone who looked like me. And I was being constantly told that if there wasn't anyone that looked like me and I had all these other things that I had to kind of live up to anyways, I might as well not try. But I think what we're kind of aiming to do is to create these communities of diverse women from all backgrounds to kind of tackle that stigma head on. It's a small step, but it's hopefully going to be one of the first steps.
Yeah, it's an important step. I'd love if you wouldn't mind as well chatting a bit about kind of, yeah, the intersectionality of broadly of getting more folks of diverse backgrounds elected. You identify as a minority woman. In New Brunswick, for example, the province I'm from, we've literally never elected a person of color. But when I first realized that just a few years back, I remember being like ashamed, like how in our, you know, 150 years as being a province, how have we never elected a person of color? So, and again, like our representation of women is very low as well. So I'd love to hear, I guess, whether it's programming or research or just more broadly, your thoughts on yeah, like why, again, it's so important to have that broad diversity further than just kind of stating the gender representation.
Absolutely. I think one of the really difficult things to accept as someone from a minority background is the fact that even though I love the United States of America, and I'm sure many other women from across the world can say the same for their country, when you're in a minority position, you so often are told that this isn't your country, even though I was born here, grew up here, like I'm devoted to serving my community in any way I can. There's almost always someone who will kind of push back on you and tell you you should go back to wherever you came from, even though there is literally nowhere else I could go back. This is the only country I've known, really. And there's almost this extra need to encourage people who have this passion for those around them and the community that they were raised in to recognize that this is their place as well. I think being in the position that I've been so incredibly fortunate to be in, I've really taken it as a responsibility upon myself to call upon others to serve and to kind of recognize that the self-doubt that we are inherently like born with as a result of being a minority is something that we need to overcome. It's unfortunate that I have to use the word overcome when it's something that we don't really deserve to have in a lot of unfortunate respects, but it's definitely something that we can only do by calling on people to recognize their own leadership potential and their own place in each of our communities. I think it's a broader statement and a reminder that everyone has a place in where they want to serve, essentially, whether they were born there or whether they turned it into their home.
Yeah, I really like the framing of that. And I know in Canada and the US, we share a lot of similarities and a lot of differences, but I want to highlight differences right now. but the unfortunate reality is some of the big political challenges facing the US right now are also kind of rearing their head in Canada, and we're coming up to our federal election in October. So just a, 2.5 months, I think, which is, it's coming up quick. But also there is the Democratic primaries going on in the U.S. And a general election coming up fairly soon as well. Are there any kind of are you anticipating any of the folks that you're working with or the communities you're working with playing a role in the upcoming election? Are you hoping to see maybe some of their names on ballots or taking on leadership roles in local campaigns or things like that?
Sure. So I think when I initially kind of came up with the concept for Leading Women of Tomorrow, I was incredibly optimistic. And I'm like, well, I anticipate that we can have people starting to run for office within like 5 to 7 years of them being a part of their program. But I think the reality is that we, first of all, have a lot of age restrictions in the United States for quite a few elected positions. And second of all, it takes a long time to build the, I guess, like framework essentially to run for elected office. So within this upcoming election cycle, because so many of our members are either recent college graduates or still in college themselves, they've actually kind of taken it into their own hands to be representatives for a lot of these campaigns. So stumping on their own campuses and figuring out new ways that they can make each of these campaigns' messages really more relevant to the communities that they're from is the role that they've kind of taken on themselves. But I'm really excited, hopefully in the next decade or so, to see a lot of our own members' names on ballots. It's going to be a slow process for sure, but I think having people starting to recognize this interest early on is one of the leading ways for them to build the necessary framework to run in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, such a great point you make, like the restrictions as well. In many cases would be very difficult to overcome. And even again, just the comparison, the district sizes being so large, it would be really difficult. If I'm thinking again of my own personal experience, it'd be very difficult as a young person, particularly in the college context, who's like focusing a lot on just graduating.
Absolutely.
To be able to, kind of take on that huge, amazing step. But it sounds like you're really laying that foundation so that when folks are ready, or want to contribute in other ways, like you mentioned, they've got that skills and those foundations and the confidence to be able to do that, which, I think is such an important, really starting spot.
Definitely, definitely.
So I would love to just ask, I guess, if there are anything else you're kind of thinking about.
Sure. So I think one of the number one questions that I get as a community organizer is, what is something that I can do to kind of make a difference in the gender gap in governance? Do I need to run? If I'm a man, is there any other way that I can kind of support the cause? And I think my response to that is definitely to recognize that you have the opportunity to mobilize the woman in your life. I think one of the simplest and most effective ways to kind of tackle the broader gender gap in leadership positions is to recognize when the women in your life do something that kind of demonstrates their leadership potential. Because unfortunately, the stats definitely reinforce that women fail to see themselves as leaders oftentimes, even though they already are performing leadership tasks. So I would encourage everyone to just take a moment out of your day and just tell someone in your life that you appreciate her and how she's organizing in her own community, essentially.
The stat I often hear is like a woman needs to be asked 7 times to run before she'll actually actively consider that as a real path forward, which is, it's a lot of asking. We got a lot of asking to do.
We have a lot of asking to do.
Yeah. So I think that's such a great call to action to end our conversation on. Thank you again so much for joining. I really enjoyed this. I got a lot out of it. And I think it'll be really valuable for folks listening to hear a bit more about the context of what you folks are doing in the U.S. Because again, first U.S. guest. So, I really appreciated this.
I appreciate it as well. And thank you so much for having us on.
Oh, my pleasure. And I can't wait to see how both your organization evolves and how the folks that you're supporting and really providing tools for how they evolve and what roles they take on in the next few years.
Yeah, we're honestly looking forward to that as well.
Thanks so much for tuning in. As always, if you liked this episode, please leave us a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow along with the conversation on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter @ themmonk. Thanks so much.